Well, happy Thursday to those of you in the Western Hemisphere. Because of the holidays and other things going on, I'm running a tad bit late, but it's happy to be able to join you again for some discussions on leadership. And I'm going to jump script a little bit today and talk a little bit about agitators. And that's a broad range, agitators. I want to give you some examples and maybe some things you can identify with or maybe not. And I'm going to probably use by and large a church setting or a public service organizations to kind of give you some backdrop. First one I want to do is I was visiting a church a number of years ago. It was a smaller church. They had about 120 members or thereabouts. And on Sunday, they'd have anywhere between 40 and maybe 60 people that would worship with them. And it was interesting that the pastor said that they always had to be really right on the dot because they had several members who watched the clock. And sure enough, there was a clock in the back of the sanctuary, if you can believe that. It was actually 5 minutes fast, which I found kind of amusing. I guess they figured they'd make sure that way that the pastor got done on time. So as we were walking through the doors going into the sanctuary, there's this woman there that was standing there, and she's tapping her wristwatch saying, "You're not going to start on time, I can tell you. Now you know you need to be starting on time." And so the pastor stopped and talked to this person, tried to be apologetic and placate them a little bit. So as we got up and we did the service, and constantly there were two or three people who you could see they were always watching their watch or their phone to look at the time. As we were finishing and we were walking out on the recessional, if you will, this individual stood there and she was tapping her watch and she says, "You're not doing what you're supposed to. You ran 2 minutes long." And I looked at her and I said, "Well, you know," I said, "God gave his son, Jesus, to die on the cross for us so that we would have the opportunity to be worthy enough to be with God for eternity. I suspect that it's probably okay if God made such a big sacrifice that it would be okay if we ran just a little bit long on a prayer because we had prayer requests from the congregation." She just stood there with her mouth open and she says, "Well, you're not going to be back, are you?" And I thought to myself, "Hopefully not." And I said, "Oh yeah," I said, "you'll be seeing a lot of me." And she says, "Well, we'll see about that." And long story short, I was told through channels, pastor said, "Well, I don't think I'll let you pulpit fill because this individual said she just didn't like you at all." And I tend to have that effect on people because I tend to be honest and blunt. And people who like to be controlling and people who like to create antagonistic circumstances don't like the truth because when you're faced with the truth, you have to deal with it. It's similar to having discussions with people that say, if you want to believe in heaven, you got to believe in hell, whatever form that might be. There can't be one without the other. And they just get furious. So I want to talk a little bit about the type of personality we have. This particular lady, I found out, had been an elementary school teacher in a small school district for 45 years. And she made the comment, apparently, to this individual I talked to that for all those years, the clock governed her very existence. And you had to start on time, you had to be finished on time. And after all those years, it was her turn to make everybody else miserable by watching time. Now, marking time that way is sort of indicative of that individual's, I think, probably lack of self-esteem to some degree, having felt powerless over her circumstances for so many years, that her response would be that now that I'm done with it, I can punish others. Well, the problem is that last time I checked, we're not to judge and we're not to punish. That's up to God. And I think it's important that as we go through small groups and we go through training and we go through discussions, both in the pulpit as well as in other venues, that you can't allow these folks to continue. And now this is a challenge, and I caution you that if you take this type of action and you take this type of strategy, that it could cost you a position because sometimes these folks have got a lot more clout than they should, or they're considered the dear person, or that's just sort of the way they are, and they're always going to be that way. Well, if you're a leader, or if you're a pastor of a church, you have a higher calling that God expects you to speak the truth, and God expects you to strive toward excellence in God's church. And if that means calling somebody out, if that means calling attention to someone's behavior, then so be it. Now, strategically, there are ways to deal with it. I've mentioned the word strategic patience before. Mark Clifton uses that, as does Dr. Tom Rainer. And so sometimes you have to pick the time and the place when you're going to have that discussion. It doesn't have to be right at that point. For me, with her and me being in the church on a temporary basis, I wasn't beholden to her or that congregation, and I thought I would do some folks a service by speaking out. Interestingly enough, that pastor told me that afterwards that a number of people came to the from the congregation came to her and said it was about time somebody had talked to her about her behavior. And from my understanding, after that, then she was less caustic with the pastor about that. And so, again, picking your battles, picking the hill you want to defend your position on, or as some friends say, it's a ditch I don't want to die in. And so the visual descriptors that come to mind on those analogies are quite different from one another, but the meaning's pretty much the same. So one thing I'd like to suggest to you, the first thing is then through the use of small groups, through Sunday school classes, through Wednesday evening meetings, or whatever your church may be, there's an opportunity then to talk about what God expects of us, how God expects us to behave, how are we to be loving toward one another, how are we to be supportive of the pastor who is the spiritual head of the church, how are the deacons or the elders, whoever the governing body is in the church, by polity and by scripture, they are responsible for the care and support of the pastor. Even if they disagree with them, outwardly they are to support them, they are to pray for them, and they are to help them through difficult times. As opposed to many churches and many individuals that I counsel, where those are the bodies who tend to come after them first because they listen to three or four malcontents who have the ear of the members on the session or the deacons, the governing board, whatever you call it. And they show up, and so the body is feels compelled to beat up the pastor. And then, of course, afterwards, they'll come back and say, gee, we're really sorry about that, but we wanted to make sure people knew they were heard. And I said, well, it's all right for them to be heard, but it's okay for you to go back and tell them that they're wrong. Let that sink in a minute. Imagine that. Two, three people go to the governing body and they start backbiting the pastor or the Christian ed director or whoever, the organist. And that person from the session or the governing body says, well, you know what? We'll agree to disagree because I think you're wrong, and this is why. And we are here to lift those people up. They are treasured as far as God is concerned to be the spiritual head of the church. Now, obviously, if there are conflicts and there are issues that need to be addressed, they can be done so privately and lovingly so as to not cause damage to any either the church or the pastor. As a police chief, it was not uncommon for someone who was within the organization to be unhappy, so they would, rather than come to me and talk or to one of the supervisors, they would go to the mayor or the city official, like a city manager or a commissioner or a council person that they might know casually, either because of softball or social settings or whatever, and talk to them about all these terrible things and how they're not being reconciled or addressed or they're constraining the ability to do their job. And the next thing you know, then as the chief, you get called into the city manager's office or the mayor's office and the council person. Well, this is what we're hearing. Well, how many people have you heard it from? Well, I don't want to go into details. And I said, well, you know what? If they won't stand up and be counted, and they're scared of retribution, and they're using that kind of old trick, and you can't even tell me how many people you've talked to, then I'm not going to be real worried about it. Now, in my mind, I'm going to say, obviously, if this kind of stuff is starting, I need to get a stop to it. Or I need to get my resume out there and decide to go someplace else where you're more appreciated. An old friend of mine told me one time that you always make an envelope before you leave, and it's for your successor that you talk to them about what they need to watch out for. And one of the things, the final thing is that they should prepare an envelope, and they should always have the box that they carried their stuff into stored in the closet so that they can carry it out on short notice. And it's a sad reality, and I think society has gotten worse. It's so outcome driven for winning. It's so much focus, very much, I think, on athletics that you always have to win. And it always amazes me that in college football, that a coach can have a winning season, they can still get fired because they didn't win a national championship. And in the church, it's a little bit that way. Well, you've been here a while, and you've talked a good talk, and you've got us to do these things, but we're not seeing very many more people in here. You're not doing your job. You're not going out there knocking on doors and getting these folks in. And even though you have talked to them and you've provided information and instruction, if the church is faltering, it's much easier to blame the pastor or pastors than it would be for them to recognize that maybe it's their behavior or their lack of action that's causing harm to the church. And so, if you've got a church that at one time had thousands and now they're down to like 200 members over a 20-year period of time, they've got some problems, and there's a real good chance that those pastors have been shuffled through there. Even if they're tenured, they've gone through tormentual verbal tongue lashings and getting beat up, figuratively at least, hopefully not literally. And so you have these issues at a point to where they are dipping into their reserves to try to make their budgets each year, and they do the same old thing over and over again. I like, Albert Einstein, who said insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for a different outcome. And so you have antagonists. I was talking to a gentleman who has a fairly large church in the Midwest, and he was concerned because he had one particular member who would always send his curmudgeonly, snarky emails to his secretary rather than directly to him. And he'd always start off with, "Well, this old gray-haired guy, got some questions about why we're doing these things and how aren't we living within our means and blah, blah, blah." And so the pastor said after about the first six or seven, he just stopped responding. And he told his secretary to basically say, "Look, it's the session that made that decision to spend that money. If you have questions, get a hold of them." And then I had contacted him. I said, "You voiced your concerns. If you'd like to write them out, I will bring it before the session." Well, he would never do that. And this guy had actually worked for this, where they live, the city, as a building inspector for almost 35 years. Somebody he was used to being put upon. And again, he made the comment to this pastor friend of mine that after all the years of verbal abuse and how he was beat up and not basically respected or thought highly of for what he had to do, it was now his turn to take it out on the pastor. Think about that for just a second. So, what causes these people to do that? The best that I can tell, based on about 50 some years of working with people, is that there's a sense of low self-esteem. Sometimes they're bullies, there's no question about it. If you've been in any kind of environment for any period of time, you certainly know that there are workplace bullies. Bullying didn't stop when you left elementary school, that's for sure. As a result, then, there's this sense, I guess, that after all these years of their perception of being taken advantage of, and I do believe a lot of times it's their perception, because the pastor said in all the years that he had spoken to people, he'd been there quite a number of years, the pastor had, that very few people within the city organization or in the community had anything good to say about this guy because he had a terrible attitude. He was rude. He was unyielding. He wasn't flexible. And basically, he was always an unhappy person, and he brings that into the church. Well, obviously, if you get enough of these people who come into the church and they have that attitude, it's not too long before it starts infecting the congregation. Think of the damage one or two of those people can do to visitors that are coming in or families that are there that are in need. It's devastating. And if I'm visiting a church and I hear somebody service or grumping about too loud, the organ's too loud, or the pastor's preaching, I like that they always say, "You preach too much from the pulpit." Well, I think that's part of what you're supposed to do. And what it is the old adage about, "Pastor, I really love your sermons. I can see a lot of myself in them, so knock it off." A lot of times, folks in those circumstances do not want to hear the truth, or they do not see the truth, and they don't want other people to know it either because they don't want to get pushed out. So make a lot of noise, threaten, grump. This old thing about somehow if you're older and you have gray hair, you're automatically wise. That's about as bogus. Wisdom is earned, respect is earned, not simply just sitting it out on the sidelines and spending most of your life rather than actually engaging in positive change. We had an adage or an abbreviation on in law enforcement said ROD, Rod, retired on duty. Basically, somebody had already decided they were retired, but they just hadn't put in their time yet, so they weren't doing anything while they were still working. And I think we've got a lot of those in the church too, who bring that mentality, bring that negativity into it. And yes, we pray for them and we love them, but that first step then is education. Secondly, then there is corrective behavior. In some denominations, there's a very clear process for discipline for members of the church who are acting against God's will, and that can be done. A lot of times, the pastor with some leadership will sit down with the people and have frank conversations with them. I've had several people who, over the years, have told me that if I'm going to continue to preach on this vein or if I'm going to continue to act this way, then they're going to have to go somewhere else to church. And I said, "Well, where would you like to go? I probably know the pastor, and I'd be more than happy to make a phone call, introduce you to them, and take you over there, and so you can kind of see if that's where you want to go." And I've had members just shake their head. "Well, you can't do that." Well, yeah, there comes a point in time where you have to take a stand for the health of the church. But pastors alone and leaders alone can't take that stand. If the leadership of the church, both formal and informal, are not willing to be supportive and back you up, then exercise caution. It may be time for you to try someplace else if they're not going to support you, because all you're going to do is just make yourself crazy and probably make yourself ill trying to fight that battle by yourself. The third thing then is actually, is it time to dust off your shoes and start looking for another place? There are plenty of churches who are excited and wanting to grow. They are wanting to do Christ's ministry. And so if you're a visionary, if you're a strategist, and you're someone who can come in and fill them and excite them and ignite them, trust me, there are those places out there. So I would suggest to you then, it's the education, the confronting, and then deciding whether you need to go someplace else. And then also, finally, is that you raise the awareness within that congregation that even though they choose not to really pay attention to it, that if you've lost 600 members in 15 years, something is seriously wrong. And there needs to be an evaluation. And in that point, then, if they're willing to do that, then you retain the services of a church consultant or consultant that's in your nonprofit area or whatever field of expertise that you may be in. And you bring them in to do a third-party impartial analysis. And part of that analysis, if you're a church, should be a spiritual health analysis as well as a demographic and psychographic survey of the area in which they live to see what the community expects of them and what they can do to benefit the community. Listen to the consultant, invest the money, and then have a plan in place to move forward. So that's my topic for you today. I hope that you enjoyed listening. Feel free to leave me some feedback or have questions. I enjoy the questions. I love getting back with you on those. So I would encourage you to do that. If you'd like to know more about church consultation, I would invite you to go to my website, which is churchconsultants.net. And I've got additional information there. If you'd like to know kind of more of the basis of the formatting that can be used, if you'd like to learn more information about that, you can leave the feedback form and I'll be happy to get back with you. So I hope you have a good weekend coming up, and I'll look forward to visiting with you all again next week.